And now to the case of the Pennsylvania cheerleader who won a free speech case. The Supreme Court ruled in favor of the teen who was denied a spot in the cheerleading squad after her profane social media post. The high court concluded the district had violated Brandi Levy's freedom of speech under the First Amendment. Here's Levy speaking with Reuters.
I'm proud of sticking through it all the way to here. I really am, because it's going to prove a point that schools shouldn't be able to punish students for how they express their feelings.
What do you think of this ruling? Should schools be able to take action against students for speech and actions that happen off school grounds? 800-642-1234. Frank Lamonti is a professor of media law at the University of Florida, where he directs the Brechner Center for Freedom of Information. Frank, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thanks for having me, Kate. I guess your program is going to go from ticks to TikToks this morning.
Oh, that was a good one. I wasn't ready for that. Well, can you walk us through the crux of this case and how a post on Snapchat in 2017 got all the way up to the high court?
Sure. So the crux of the case is exactly what you just explained. Brandi Levy is a 14-year-old high school freshman in Pennsylvania. She's disappointed that she's not chosen for varsity cheerleading. And so she and a friend on a Saturday at a convenience store outside of school grounds or school events decide to record a little Snapchat post where they engage in a vent about how frustrated they are about school. They flip their middle fingers to the smartphone camera, and it's got some strong profanity in it. And it goes up on Brandi Levy's Snapchat account, where it quickly disappears after 24 hours, like they do. But the post came to the attention of the cheerleading coach, who then brought it to the attention of school administrators, and she was disciplined by way of a year's suspension from participating in cheer. She brings the case to the federal courts under the First Amendment. The First Amendment, after all, protects all of us against being punished by the government, and a public school is a government agency for the content of our speech. And she wins all the way up the district court and then the Court of Appeals, and the school district takes it to the Supreme Court. And of course, the Supreme Court doesn't take cases just to decide whether one school wrongfully punished one child. They take cases to draw broad lines that will guide future courts and future attorneys in similar types of cases. So that was what we were all anticipating and I guess hoping for, was some clarity about the larger issue, a recurring one in courts throughout the country. Where does a school's punitive authority begin and end when a student is not on school grounds, not using school facilities or school equipment, just on her personal time talking about the school? Yeah. At what point would a school be able to kind of reach into your off-campus personal life and discipline you for what you say?
Yeah, and those boundaries are really tricky. I mean, it was an 8-1 ruling, decisive, but, you know, Judge Breyer said, you know, authorizing schools to police both on and off campus speech potentially, you know, includes all the speech a student utters during a 24-hour day. And he called it a heavy burden to justify the intervention off school grounds. What did you make of how Breyer expressed himself in this case, in this ruling?
Well, I think the court navigated its way past a lot of landmines. If you look at what the school district and their supporters were asking the court to do, it would have really been quite a breathtaking reallocation of government authority over individuals. They were asking the court to knock down entirely the wall between off and on-campus speech and to declare that all student speech 24/7 throughout their lives is equally punishable by a school, no matter where and when it happens, because it has the potential to cause people to react to it at the school. And as the court wisely, I think, discerned, this was not just a social media case at all. This was a case about all off-campus speech, so that a student would potentially be subject to discipline if she went to the school board meeting and spoke at the open mic period, if she gave an interview to her local radio station. All of that would now become equally punishable by the school as if she had said it inside of a classroom during the school day. And the court was just not prepared to go that way, which I think was a wise exercise of discretion on the court's part. What they failed to do was go further and to give us a bright line standard or a bright line test as to where disciplinary authority begins and ends. If you go back 52 years ago, the court did give us that bright line in a case called the Tinker case, the case we all study in junior high school.
Tinker versus Des Moines. Yeah.
Right. Students being punished for wearing anti-war black armbands to school. And in that case, the court did draw a bright line. And they said the school's punitive authority does not kick in until the point where the speech threatens a substantial and material disruption of the school, meaning something more than just some hurt feelings, something more than just an exchange of harsh words, but actually preventing the school from being able to do its job. And I think many of us were looking for that same kind of a generic bright line in the Mahanoy case that could be applied in all future contexts, and we didn't get that. We got a very narrow and a fact-specific decision that clearly protects this kind of speech, which is just venting about your displeasure with this government agency.
Well, the district did bring up things like bullying and how to monitor and prevent that, that they would have to intervene, whether it would happen on or off school grounds.
Yeah, and I think that, frankly, is the ground on which the court was hesitant to tread in this case, which clearly did not involve bullying, which clearly involved a very different factual scenario where a student was just expressing her dissatisfaction with a school policy decision. And after all, that's exactly why we have a First Amendment, right? So that people can express their dissatisfaction with government policy decisions and not feel intimidated in doing so. So I think they left that purposefully for another day. And that other day is inevitably going to come. That type of a case where a student is punished for harsh words directed at a classmate, as opposed to just directed at the school generally, directed at a classmate that puts that classmate in fear or in discomfort, that case inevitably will come. And I think there are some signals that the court is prepared to relax the off-campus, on-campus wall in a future case if the facts are sufficiently compelling, and these facts just will not.
We have University of Florida media law professor Frank Lamonti, who stays with us on student speech rights. Do you have a teenager at home? Are you monitoring their social media? Do you think that schools should be able to punish students for their social media activity off campus? Join in 800-642-1234. Back in a minute here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're discussing a recent student speech rights victory, the ruling by the U.S. Supreme Court that a former cheerleader's 2017 Snapchat post laden with F-bombs about her high school is protected speech under the First Amendment. Do you have concerns about freedom of speech as it relates to technology and social media? Still time to talk. 800-642-1234. We have law professor Frank Lamonti, who leads the Brechner Center for Freedom of Information at the University of Florida, and he's with us for about 10 more minutes. So, Frank, I just want to quickly look at Justice Clarence Thomas, who was the dissent in this case, who brought up the 1859 decision by the Vermont Supreme Court against a student who called his teacher old. What did you make of the dissent here?
Well, to no one's surprise, Justice Clarence Thomas has consistently, every time a student First Amendment case has come before the court, dissented from the view that students have any First Amendment protections whatsoever. Justice Thomas is the originalist's originalist, and he believes in a very antiquated notion of the way that the Constitution works that's rooted in the time of the Founding Fathers. And I think the problem with his view, frankly, is that at the time of the Founding Fathers, school was a vastly different place than it is today. I mean, you typically went to school 4 or 5 years around your farming duties, and the school was typically not run by the government. It might be run by a church, and it might be taught by somebody who was 17 or 18 years old. And there were no compulsory truancy laws under which you could be arrested if you didn't show up. So it was just a vastly different place than it is today. And so the rules that might have been in the minds of Madison and Jefferson at the time of the Constitution clearly don't apply in a situation where now it's possible to still go to school. The average age of a college student in America is 26 years old. And the idea that a 26-year-old might have no First Amendment right to criticize the government would certainly have been anathema to Madison and Jefferson.
Well, you mentioned college students, and there are other cases that are taking this up, certainly. One involved a University of Tennessee graduate student who really liked the Cardi B song WAP. And, you know, can you point to this case as and what you see out of freedom of speech?
Yeah, so I think that case, the student's name is Kimberly D.A., and she's 27 years old. She's in graduate school at the University of Tennessee. And just as you said, Kate, she's a fan of Cardi B, and she likes to use Instagram to have fun in her off hours and to talk about the songs that she enjoys and to dance and perform along with them. And somebody brings these posts to the attention of her college and says, I think that this is an unprofessional way for one of your students to behave. What are you going to do about this? And the college initiates expulsion procedures against her, saying that you acted in an unprofessional manner on your Instagram and it's unbefitting the pharmacy profession for which you are studying. And I mean, this is a object lesson of what happens when the courts don't draw bright lines to confine disciplinary authority, because unprofessionalism certainly seems like a reach into a person's off-campus behavior that should be beyond the power of a governmental agency. After all, we don't call it professional media, we call it social media. You are supposed to be able to have fun and talk about your political opinions without fear that the government is looking over your shoulder every hour of the day and night. And I think inevitably that will be the next case that needs to present itself to the Supreme Court, is where do we allocate that authority and where do we draw the boundary lines when the speaker is an adult-aged college student? And you can read in the court's opinion that they sort of telegraph that they think that the reason that a student's First Amendment rights diminish in the school setting is in deference to their parents' child-rearing authority. Mm-hmm. That the reason that Brandi Levy might not have the full benefit of the First Amendment that you and I do is because her parents have a role in raising her and disciplining her. But of course, for a 27-year-old graduate student, that's just not in play anymore. So I think there's every chance that when the Supreme Court weighs in, they will give more latitude and more elbow room for college students to express themselves without fear of punishment.
What is the status of this University of Tennessee case?
Well, she's bringing a First Amendment suit, and it's like many suits. You mentioned Brandi Levy did her post 4.5 years ago, and these cases take quite a lot of time to work their way through the federal courts, and inevitably either it will slowly work its way through the courts, or as often is the case, it will settle out and resolve, and hopefully she'll get herself reinstated to school if that's what she chooses. But these cases are popping up all over the country. Before the DA case, there was one out in New Mexico involving a 26-year-old medical student who also was disciplined by his school for a political rant on Facebook where he just used a lot of profanity to express his strong anti-abortion views. And he too was disciplined for that entirely off-campus speech in which he didn't in any way connect it up to the school or his med school status. And he lost that case. And the Supreme Court declined to take his appeal. So these cases are cropping up all over the country. And it's only a matter of time before the court has to confront, where do we draw the line and allow people to have the full benefit of the First Amendment, even when they're enrolled in an educational institution?
We're talking with Frank Lamonti, who's a professor of law at the University of Florida, director of the Brechner Center for Freedom of Information. You can weigh in. When should a school or other government entity be able to regulate content on social media? Should that be age-driven? Do you think judges who don't know about social media and don't use it should be ruling on it? 800-642-1234. Frank, let's go to that point. And, you know, this social media being for a younger set of people sometimes, is there any concern that a case like this could be ruled on by judges who don't know their way around Snapchat or other social media platforms?
Yeah, I think that's quite right. And many people, frankly, were nervous about seeing a Supreme Court of people, none of whom are digital natives. I can confidently say that Samuel Alito has never Snapchatted in his life. And seeing people whose only interaction with social media in their entire professional adult lives has been being cautioned about staying the heck off of it. And for that reason, many people were nervous that the court would give in to this kind of phobia about the power of social media to do harm, which was a lot of the school's argument, frankly, that we should change the rules that normally cabin the authority of government agencies because of the power and the reach of social media. And if you study the First Amendment and you litigate these cases, you find out that over the years, government agencies have always made this argument every time there's a new form of communication, going back to comic books, going back to motion pictures, and more recently, video games. It's always been argued that whatever the latest innovation in communication is so much more dangerous than any other one that's ever come before that we need to rewrite the First Amendment rulebook and give the government more regulatory authority. And to their credit, so far, the Supreme Court has not given into that phobia. And they've said the First Amendment is the First Amendment. And it is platform neutral.
I'm wondering, as we start to wrap up here, do you see school districts, universities really being aggressive and persistent about taking these cases and driving them to court? Or do you see more settlements in these freedom of speech cases out of court?
Well, sure. That's what normally happens, is at some point somebody blinks. At some point somebody says, this is just not worth 4, 5, 6 years of litigating anymore. Because after all, particularly if you're a student, you're in a very short time turnaround. You know, Brandy Levy has no interest. She's a sophomore in college. She has no interest in joining the varsity cheer squad, I assure you. So that ship has sailed. And so most of the time, either the student or the educational institution decides, look, let's just resolve this. And that's one reason why we don't have a ton of guidance from the higher appellate courts and the Supreme Court, is that the case just goes away. But at some point, somebody is going to have to be the Brandy Levy of college campus and is going to have to stick with the case and decide to litigate it, not just for their own personal benefit, but for the benefit of future generations of students who really need that assurance. I mean, that's one of the things that the Supreme Court has always told us in the realm of the First Amendment, is that we have to give speakers what they call breathing space. You have to be confident that you are protected against government retaliation, or else you will censor yourself. And so that's why it's so important for the court to draw some bright lines of authority.
Frank, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for the opportunity, Kate.
Frank Lamonti is a professor of media law at the University of Florida, where he directs the Brechner Center for Freedom of Information. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.